I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. No Kings protesters took to the streets by the millions chanting, "This is what democracy looks like." But is it? Plus, taxpayers on the West Coast suffering with the obvious outcomes of progressive policies, we'll discuss, and outrage over Barry Weiss at CBS News proves exactly why Barry Weiss is needed at CBS News. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support this little independent show of ours for just $5 a month. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show for $5. Nicole's in here making me giggle before we start the show. Never good timing. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Nothing to laugh about today. Nothing's funny because we have a king reigning over the United States of America, and there's nothing funny about that. No, I have a lot to talk to reflect on after the No Kings protest that happened over the weekend. I ended up, as much as I wanted to go down to Portland, Portland's covered. There's enough people on the ground in Portland. And I thought, let me stay in Seattle and see what the No Kings protest and march look like in Seattle. But before I went down there, because the Seattle one was, I have so many thoughts, you guys. So the Seattle one was in the afternoon, and I was getting ready and I was getting geared up and stuff to go down with all our equipment and whatever it was. And I saw on my community Facebook page that there was a small little gathering of No Kings demonstrators down the street from me. And I'll tell you what, I had this giant blank, because I had got it for some other project, giant blank poster board sitting in my garage. And I don't know what came over me, but I ran out. I saw that they were down the street from me, you know, protesting Donald Trump, like 100 of them, mostly geriatrics. And so I grabbed this poster board and I just whipped up signs. I was writing feverishly as fast as I could to try to get down there in time. And I think my signs turned out pretty good. And keep in mind, this is like a 5 foot tall poster board. And so I was like, well, I have too many words on there and I don't think the geriatrics will be able to read it if I stand too far away. But this was the thing that I think overtook me, and I got down there and it was too late. They'd already left by then. But on one side I wrote, "WA Dems are using Trump to distract from their own failures and you're letting them get away with it." On the other side, "Trump is not to blame for our drug crisis, our homeless crisis, record taxes, record unaffordability, our crime crisis, record low test scores, record high gas prices in Washington." And I said, "Washington Democrats did all of that." And those are just factual signs. I mean, that's just factual. And so I really want to go down there and just park it across from the geriatrics. Is it mean to call them geriatrics? I just wanted to park it across from the angry No Kings people in my town. I just didn't get down there in time.
Wow, but they were gone that quickly, huh?
Well, they started early because I think everybody was doing these individual ones and then wanted to get to the larger march in Seattle. So anyway, I'll save that sign for a rainy day, certainly. But look, okay, first let me just say off the bat, protest is awesome. I think anytime anybody decides to peacefully go out and exercise their First Amendment rights, regardless of whether I think the rationale behind it and the message behind it is absolutely asinine, that's America. And I think that's a cool thing. And as long as you do it peacefully, any involvement from citizens to make the country into what they think will be a better place, I really don't have an issue with. And there were millions of people who showed up for the No Kings marches across the country. I think some of the estimates have it around 7 million, and that's pretty significant. Still not enough to win Kamala Harris the popular vote, but still is a pretty significant number of people. So I'll just start there. I might disagree with you, but protest all you want. That being said, there are some things that genuinely bother me and disturb me about what I saw in downtown Seattle. And they started their rally at the Space Needle, and then they marched down to the entry to Pike Place Market and then sort of dispersed from there. And I want to go through these things one by one because I think they're all significant and really undermine any sort of like effort. If you are trying to get your fellow countrymen to like wake up to what you view as the danger of Donald Trump, I just don't think that this is going to get you anywhere. So one of the common sentiments I saw in this crowd, because I think it's what I saw down there, it's not just about Trump. It is about vilifying everyone who supports Donald Trump. And if you're down there and you're just like, you have qualms with Donald Trump and things he's doing that you want to call out, that's one thing. But vilifying nearly 80 million Americans wholesale who voted for him I guess I just don't understand that. So I saw a lot of signs like this one, same sheet, new hat, and it's got, you know, the Confederate hat and Nazi hat and the KKK hood and then a MAGA hat. Got it. So you're basically saying that you believe it's not only Donald Trump you have a problem with, but, you know, half the country, or at least 78 million Americans who voted for Trump, which would include me, you believe we are just as bad as the KKK. You believe we're just as bad as the Nazis who murdered millions of people. Got it. So that sentiment to me was very pervasive. And they want to go out and they say, we're peaceful and all this stuff. I would describe them as physically peaceful, verbally violent, and mentally challenged, mentally questionable. So another one that I got to say, this one actually bothers me to the core, this sentiment. And I see this on Facebook often, and I saw it represented in a lot of the signs. And we just need to talk about this. If you're watching and you're a No Kings protester and you despise Donald Trump, fine. But can we please talk about this sentiment that these people believe what they're doing is somehow comparable to literal soldiers who fought literal Nazis and died during World War II. A lot of this one, this sign, your elders fought fascism. Now it's your turn. Join us. So a couple things there. Our elders, you know, went to war, fought and died to defeat the Nazis and save the world. You're marching in the street with a sign. It's not the same thing, okay? And 99.99% of the people in that crowd would never, even if it were about Donald Trump and they think he's literally a dictator, they wouldn't go fight and lay down their life for that cause or for any cause. So can we please stop the comparisons that your bravery and sacrifice is somehow comparable to the many, many thousands of people who fought and died for this country and for the world? It really grosses me out, and it just shows this sort of mental disconnect. Another thing that deeply disturbed me, being down there, and again, look, most of the people down there marching with signs, you know, fine, but seeing the children, and this just disturbs me, horrible parenting. You want to bring your kid out to a protest? Fine. But the amount of indoctrination that's going on with little kids, and I saw a ton of little kids holding a variety of signs, but this one in particular just caught my eye. Trump or rights? You can't have both. Pick one. So we've got this little girl who, what, looks 10 years old, and she's being told by some adult, probably a parent, maybe even a teacher, that under Donald Trump, she's going to lose her rights, that she has no rights. Is that not a really disturbing thing? To teach a child or to make a child feel scared and worried about their future and their rights? And then I don't know which No Kings protest it was at, but it was somewhere else in the country where someone had a pinata of Donald Trump and they encouraged this little boy to come up and beat it and stab it with a stick. It's like, oh my gosh, you cannot like Donald Trump, but don't do that to kids. I also just had to point out in this one picture, while I was pulling this for the show, I saw these two other signs. Speak out while you still can. Think while it's legal. What side is the side that has vilified and demonized speech and painted words as violence and launched hate crime hotlines to report microaggressions and a domestic violent extremism task force to sit there and talk about moms who want control over their children's educations? There's only one side that has gone toward authoritarianism when it comes to controlling speech and trying to shame people and control their very thoughts. So it really is this disconnect that I just don't think that we'll be able to break through to. I don't know how you build bridges with, I don't know how you find common ground with people who believe if you voted for Donald Trump that you are literally the same as the KKK or you are literally the same as a Nazi. I don't think there is finding common ground with that segment of people. But still, you know, you can have a dumb sign and that's totally up to you. But I will say, I didn't go out in this crowd seeking out stupidity or vileness in the crowd. I'm mostly posted up on one corner by Pike Place Market and recorded things as they were coming toward me. And then I'd make a move to get from a different position. And the vileness and unhingedness just found me. Okay. So I want to be clear about that. So one thing to hold a sign, one thing to, you know, march peacefully. But some of the vileness that was being spewed in this crowd was quite alarming to me. One of them, the FBI, is involved. I'll get to that in a moment. But I'm making my way through the crowd when I suddenly heard a chant of a man approaching me. Here it is.
I'm going to cut through here.
Love, live, October 7th.
What does that mean?
That means we want to decolonize Palestine and decolonize the Israeli occupation.
But October 7th, people were killed and raped on October 7th.
Dismantle the Israeli occupation and free Palestine and allow them to be achieve their liberation.
But people were killed and raped on October 7th.
No, that was actually debunked as Israeli propaganda.
Okay, all right. That's one of the stupidest things I've ever heard.
Yeah, I didn't even, after that, I was like, I can't even engage with him anymore. Like, as good as that would be for clicks and views, that's one of the stupidest people I've ever met. And I was like, okay, bye, whatever. But I think one of the things that disturbed me about that is you're always going to have, you know, unhinged lunatics with crazy opinions like October 7th was a PSYOP run by the Israeli government. But this guy was marching through a crowd of progressives chanting, long live October 7th, and nobody was batting an eye. And they're out there talking about how they're the peaceful ones and they're the good ones and they're the moral ones and they've got the high ground. And you've got this guy marching through a crowd basically celebrating murder of Jews and the rape of Jews. And all these woke white progressives aren't batting an eye. I couldn't believe it. That was what bothered me more. Well, I could believe it. But it's like, even if I was marching with them, you know, against Donald Trump and somebody's going through the crowd chanting, long live October 7th, I'd be like, dude, no, that's not even what we're here for. So I think that disturbed me. Now, here's the truly disturbing one. And I'm told the FBI is involved in this one. So I'm just standing there, I'm minding my own business. And I spot this guy's sign, which you'll see here. It basically says, do you want to come kill Nazis with me? So, of course, I had to ask him about the sign.
Who are you going to kill?
Nazis.
Who do you define as a Nazi?
What do you mean? It's pretty...
In this context, who's a Nazi?
Stephen Miller's a Nazi.
So you're going to kill Stephen Miller?
If I had a chance, yeah, I would.
I don't know if that's something I'd say on camera, bro.
There's so much there. I was shocked. I mean, first of all, you have that sign. And again, do you want to come kill Nazis with me? So he's got a sign talking about murdering people, marching with all these woke white Seattle progressives, and that's the end of the march. So by then, they've already come all the way from Seattle Center, and apparently nobody else has an issue with this. And I could not believe that when I asked him to specify who is a Nazi in this scenario, that he actually named a member of the administration and said he would kill him if he had a chance. And then you've got this little girl with a keffiyeh there who's, oh, she's with Fox News, which isn't true. I'm not with Fox News. And then he says, F you. I couldn't believe it. I was stunned. Because even if you think that, right, you must know that there is a line with free speech and you can't actually specifically threaten to kill someone, especially a member of the president's administration, and think that there won't be consequences for that. And I hope there are. I mean, it took like maybe 60 seconds, you know, after our roundtable at the White House. We've had a pretty open dialogue with the administration, and this was going viral pretty quick online, which didn't surprise me. I'm like, I cannot believe that that guy would actually say that on camera. And I was told that the FBI is now actively trying to identify this individual, and I would too. Stephen Miller and his family have gone through a lot of threats. But also, I mean, you know, just this generic sign that he's just marching between amongst all these people who want to pretend that they have the moral high ground. Yet he was able to march, you know, a mile and a half without any problems with a sign saying, basically, come kill people with me. So that was one thing you could say, oh, I'll chalk it up to some lunatic. So I'm standing there and I've got to play this video because it just shows in real time what was happening and I've got a GoPro on my chest. So I had taken my camera down because I'm immediately trying to post this guy saying that he would kill Stephen Miller, right? So you'll see me on my phone. But thank God I had my GoPro going because, and I'm going to explain this video before I play it. So GoPro's going, this is maybe a minute later, and I'm getting ready to send this video out, and I'm talking to my security, kind of like talking about what we just saw, and I couldn't believe it. And this guy walks up, totally middle-aged, normal-looking dude. Like, they walk amongst us, okay? Like, never would have thought twice about this dude if I saw him in public. He just looked totally normal, didn't look like a left-wing lunatic at all. And he has this sign that I think is kind of funny. And even though it's anti-Trump, it's kind of a creative sign. And so you'll hear me compliment him on his sign. And then I said, you know, oh, thanks for being peaceful or something. And he says, everyone's here is peaceful. And I bring up to him, this guy just told me he'd kill Stephen Miller. So here's how this all happened.
I can't believe somebody would say that on camera. That's so on him. It's a good sign. I like the man, but it's still, that's a more creative sign. Nonviolent.
Like everybody here is nonviolent.
I don't know, some guy just told me he would murder Stephen Miller if he saw him. So,
you know what?
But the vast majority are doing just fine.
Frankly, that'd be justifiable.
No, it wouldn't.
Good God.
You're still on camera, bro. Jesus, that's crazy. That is insanely violent. You just said you were nonviolent and you want to murder someone. It is so crazy. How would that be justifiable? That is crazy. This is just a whelp. I cannot believe these people. That is crazy.
This is what democracy looks like.
That was generally not... And that guy looked like a normal dude. That guy looked like a normal guy.
Right? They're amongst us. Would you have bat an eye at that dude if you saw him at the supermarket next to you? No, he just looks like a dad or a grandpa. And here he is. This is a genuine interaction because I'm not even really intending to tape it. Because I've got my phone in my hand and my GoPro just happens to be recording, and it shows you what my sort of posture was like with the crowd. I mean, I wasn't there antagonizing them or seeking out individuals. You know, it was just they were passing by, and I thought his sign was creative, and I complimented him, and I said, you know, it's a thanks for being peaceful or whatever. And he says, everyone here is peaceful. And I say, well, no, this guy said he'd kill Stephen Miller, but most people are being peaceful. So I'm having a very friendly dialogue with him. And right after he tells me, everyone here is peaceful, he goes, oh, it would be justifiable to murder Stephen Miller. And I'm just like, you hear my security behind me like, what? It was so crazy. And so it shows like that mindset is rampant in the crowd. Absolutely. And there was a lot of, you know, signs with a guillotine and Trump's head cut off and all this stuff. Very, very violent rhetoric. You're not peaceful when you threaten to kill people. You're not peaceful when you support the idea of someone being killed. You're not peaceful when you let someone march beside you for a mile and a half who's advocating the murder and rape of Jewish people. It was a really, really just wild thing to watch. And it's disturbing. It's disturbing because it's not just the left-wing Antifa types. You know, we talk a lot about them, the extent that they're willing to go to promote violence and vandalism and carry it out and all of these things. And they really are domestic terrorists. But then you have some guy who looks like a soccer dad who also talks about how it would be justifiable to murder a member of the Trump administration and is willing in broad daylight just to say it. It was really disturbing. It was really disturbing. The other thing that bothered me quite a bit is, so the Seattle Police Department, I've talked, and this could be a whole nother segment, I'm worried about the wokeification of police departments. And this is very strategic. So you have this entity, and this goes for other police departments across the country, that I think favors conservatism. It's because they see the real life impacts every single day out on the streets of what progressive policies do to communities and do to people. I mean, they literally see the worst of the worst when it comes to crime and what substance abuse does and all of these things. So I think that's why not every cop, but a lot of cops tend to be conservative. But then what did we see happen in 2020? Well, we saw this wholesale vilification of the police, calls to defund the police. And so for those police officers who felt vilified, who felt unappreciated, who didn't want to work in cities that were seeking to defund their jobs, they left. They either left the profession or they went to areas like Florida where maybe they would be more respected and they'd actually be able to go through police work. So then what happened after that? It's very important to understand this because I think the consequences of this are going to be severe. Well, then you had, you know, a deficit. You had these blue city police departments that found themselves in a crisis with police staffing. Because a lot of the sane officers are like, bye, I don't have to put up with this. So then what did they do? Well, then they went out and they tweaked and changed their recruitment efforts. And they wanted to recruit, for example, fewer military veterans. They wanted to recruit, genuinely, fewer white people. They started this whole recruitment and they changed the questions and all of this, basically a DEI recruitment. And also a recruitment that looked at ideology as well. And so what we haven't talked enough about in the fallout from police defunding is what I think is going to be a slow, gradual wokeification of police departments. And then, of course, these blue city mayors install police chiefs that fit their ideology. So we've talked at great length about the police chief in Seattle right now, Sean Barnes, who's been out there saying that ICE is making up the fact that its agents are under threat, who's been out there saying he'll go to jail to protect the citizens of Seattle from Donald Trump. Like, insane stuff. So maybe this post shouldn't surprise me. Seattle Police Department posted this. The No Kings protest is heading into Seattle Center right now. There are still thousands of people on the streets, so it's going to be a while. Keep it up. Excuse me? They say, keep it up? Keep what up? When would the Seattle Police Department ever be allowed to cheer on a conservative protest? Go ahead, Nicole. Get it out. Nicole's over here choking to death. Get it out. Sorry. It's fine. When would the Seattle Police Department ever be allowed? Can you imagine that? To cheer on, keep it up. Like a pro-Trump march. Never. They would never be allowed to do that. They would never do that. And then if they did, God forbid, the left would lose its mind. They would call for people to be fired. And for the record, I don't think that police should take a side at all. I don't want the police cheering on a conservative protest. I don't want the police cheering on an anti-Trump protest. But in our city, again, I'm worried about the wokeification of the police department. We're seeing it to a great extent down in Portland, where Portland police seem to be singling out and arresting conservatives who have gone down there to document what's happening and vilifying them and pushing back against the Trump administration. And I don't think this is a rank and file issue per se in these blue cities, but I definitely believe there's been a concerted effort to try to turn police departments into essentially a tool of the Democratic Party. I mean, this is completely unacceptable. And you know, while they're saying, keep it up, again, you've got people in the crowd who are chanting, long live October 7th. You've got people in the crowd who have signs of Trump being decapitated. You have people in the crowd who have signs vilifying federal agents and saying the most vile, horrible things about them. And you've got the Seattle Police Department cheering it on. Yay, keep it up. It's absolutely outrageous. I don't know. But so massive protest. I won't undersell it. Millions of people across the country. But as we're going to discuss in our next segment, the only number that counts is the number of people who vote. And I'll be really impressed with No Kings if they can get, I don't know, 78 or 79 million Americans to protest against Donald Trump, because then we would have, you know, a much different situation on our hands. We're both choking today. All right. So we'll talk about the upcoming election next. First, if you're thinking that you're getting close to needing a new roof on your home, reach out to our friends at Valentine Roofing. They can help you out. They're going to do a couple things. First, they're not going to force you into a new roof if they don't think you need one. It might be a situation where they can come in and they can actually repair. Like, let's say you have a leak. It might just be something that can be repaired and you don't actually have to replace your roof. So they'll do that for you. And they'll do a free roof assessment. So that's part of it. And then if you do need a new roof, and let's say it's leaking now, Valentine offers a free leak stop. They'll make sure the leaks are fixed so no further damage happens, and then they'll replace your roof. And they also offer zero down financing, which I think is the best part. I mean, this is a major expense for home buyers when you have to eventually replace your roof. So the fact that you can get the work done now, pay over time, is great. And Valentine does more than just roofing. If you need new siding, gutters, attic insulation, or exterior cleaning, you can expect the same great service. So schedule your free estimate by calling 206 Roofing. Again, 206 Roofing. And please tell them you heard about them here on Undivided with me, Brandi Cruz. Very important you support the people who support our show. Okay, so if you are like me, you got your ballot in the mail yesterday, or I might have got mine on Saturday. Saturday, I suppose the mail doesn't come on Sundays. Yes. Nicole, you got your ballot? Yes, she says she did. And I immediately got it out. My husband had just got back from hunting, and we did our normal thing and we filled our ballots out. Still disturbing how many races on the ballot are just one person without any opponent. I'll always be genuinely disturbed by that. But I like to get that done as soon as possible. So I would encourage you to do the same. If you haven't already, though, it's important to understand what's at stake. This is an off-year election. It's not the sexiest election. We probably won't have an election night special, so to speak. But there are some key races that will have a profound impact on not just their individual districts, but the state of Washington as a whole. As you know, we are overwhelmingly a one-party state. Democrats have very strong majorities in the House and the Senate, and obviously control the governor's office and all other statewide elected offices. But just 1 to 2 seat switch in the House or Senate can make it so that can go from Democrats can push through anything they want to all of a sudden Democrats actually have to consult Republicans to be able to get something done. And even if you are a hardcore Democrat, you have to acknowledge that a little bit of checks and balances always leads to better policies. So the Seattle Times, this is not a Seattle Times is trash segment. This is a compliment for the Seattle Times editorial board, which every once in a while decides to pretend as if it's reasonable. So, you know, pretend away. They said in an op-ed, these candidates in 3 key legislative races focus on results, new taxes. And I thought this was great. So they're basically endorsing this trio of candidates. 2 of them are Democrats and 1 of them is a Republican. So Kevin Schilling, who's running for state rep in the 33rd, which is the Burien area. Democrat Amy Wallen, who's running for state senate in the 48th, which is the Kirkland area, and then Chad Mogendons, who's running for state senate in the 5th, which is the Issaquah area, and he's the Republican of the 3 of them. But the Seattle Times editorial board basically said, look, you got to put party aside, because these 3 have shown that they're willing to scrutinize budgets, they're willing to scrutinize taxes, they don't just sign off on the party line, and that's what we need in Olympia right now. And I could not agree more. So I want to focus today on the race for the 5th legislative district for state senate. So again, this is, it's one of those districts that's been reconfigurated a little bit in recent years, but it essentially is like Issaquah, a little south of Issaquah. So if you're in the 5th, you probably know that this is a race that's going to be on your ballot. So it is pitting Victoria Hunt, the Democrat, who was installed after the Bill Ramos, the former state senator, passed away late last year. And then Chad Mogendons, who's the Republican running. And look, this is a no-brainer to me. First of all, Victoria Hunt, she has been absolutely a carbon copy of whatever the Democratic Party wants her to be. And this is a district that's pretty purple. And so, you know, for that district east of Seattle, this isn't a district that wants Seattle type policies. And that's what Victoria Hunt is going to vote for. And we need, frankly, a little bit of check on the party in power. And so Chad Mogendons is going to be the perfect person for that job. So we asked Chad if he could pop on the show with us this week and talk to us a little bit about his campaign and what he's been out there doing so that he can win. Chad, welcome back to Undivided.
Thanks, Brandi. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so I got my ballot in the mail. Unfortunately, you're not in my district anymore, so I couldn't circle the circle in for you. But I mean, I got mine filled out right away, but people will have those ballots in hand. The first question is obvious. You know, you lost in the primary. So what have you been doing between then and now to try to change things?
Well, the performance compared to last year is actually it was better on primary night. I was up by about a point to a point and a half, and I only have to close 2 points. Typically, I underperform in the primary because I'm a moderate. I pick up a lot of swing voters who don't participate as much as the hard D's and hard R's. And so on primary night, I was looking at over a dozen districts that had increases between 10 and 20%, typically blue precincts, precincts. And so, I was foundationally doing well. And then those last 2 days came in, and the last 2 days really emphasized the turnout issue. We didn't have many conservatives at all turn in their ballot on the Monday and Tuesday leading up to the election. And of course, those dropped on Thursday and Friday. And as bad as it was in my district, it was even worse for Michelle in the 26, because she was leading up until then, and she dropped about 48. So I typically pick up about 3% between the primary and the general. And so that would have placed me nicely if I had kept that 47% position, because I'd closed more than half the gap already. So we're going to have to work a little harder and a little bit more emphasis on the get out the vote work. But frankly, it's a lot easier lift to convince somebody who's going to vote for you just to turn in their ballot than it is to convince somebody who wouldn't vote for you to change their vote.
Yeah, 100%. And the numbers we're talking about here, just for context, it's like 3,000 votes. I mean, in the primary, yeah, that's separated. So 10% sounds like a lot, but we're talking like 3,000 votes. And that difference can make such a substantial impact for the state. It's really wild when you think about it. So a couple key things have happened between the primary and now. You once again got the endorsement of the Seattle Times. I don't know why the Seattle Times finds you so palatable. Apparently, you're the only Republican who they'll ever endorse. So I want to talk about that in a moment.
I'm happy to be their token Republican. Right? But I think it's a statement as to just how far to the left my opponent is. She has the most partisan voting record of anybody who's represented our district, going back to when they first started publishing results 34 years ago. And so I'm not really running against her. I'm running against her party and her handlers, because she's just been lockstep with every single vote. And frankly, there were a lot of gifts that she gave us this last session. You know, $9.4 billion in new taxes for the operating budget, $3.2 billion for the transportation budget, another 6 cents on the pump. And then we don't talk much about the $2 billion that they authorized consummatically for cities and counties to increase for sales tax. So roughly $15 billion in new taxes. Now, that's over $2,000 per family. If someone broke into my house and stole $2,000, I'd feel, you know, violated. And yet we keep electing these people. It's just crazy.
Yeah. So the Seattle Times endorsement, as much as I dislike the Seattle Times, I'm glad you got that endorsement. You know, it's important. The people who read the Seattle Times, you know, are some of those people you need to reach, because as much as I think you need conservatives to turn in their ballot, you can't win that district with just conservative votes. You need people who are independent, moderate Democrats, which was the Seattle Times recently did kind of another endorsement, but they included you with some moderate Democrats who are running and basically said this slate, Chad, Amy Wallen and Kevin Schilling, we need them in Olympia because they're more reasonable. So what has been some of the things that you're hoping as you go out there will resonate with moderate Democrats and independent voters who might be turned off by the Republican label?
Well, the two campaigns that the other side runs against me is Orange Band Bad, which is just their standard one. And then they run, you know, the Dobbs decision. And so as a person who's gotten now 8 Seattle Times endorsements, always got an outstanding rating from the Municipal League, I'm fairly inoculated to the Orange Band Bad stuff. And the Dobbs decision stuff, I thought I was inoculated from too, because I've been pro-choice from the beginning, was even endorsed by Planned Parenthood way back before Planned Parenthood went off the deep end. And I thought that was a non-issue. I supported Initiative 120. That's the rule of the land. We're just going to move on to other things. But no, the hit pieces that are coming out right now are saying I support a ban on abortion, which has never been the case. It's really kind of crazy, their strategies for trying to, you know, paint me as an extremist, which, you know, if you talk to anybody in my own party, I am exactly the opposite. I'm too moderate in their eyes.
It's really lazy, in my opinion. I wish voters would see through it that, oh my gosh, how many years are you going to campaign on Orange Man Bad and the abortion issue before voters actually hold you to account for some of the things that are really, really impacting their lives? So just one more time, Chad, what's at stake here? If you're to get this seat, what would that mean, not just for your district, but for the state?
So if either Michelle or I pick up a seat this election cycle, we break the supermajority in the Senate. And that means that the other side has to get some Republican involvement to pass bonds. And it means that we can stop the worst of the worst bills that come through. And so we're actually someone that they'll have to negotiate with. Now, I served 2 terms when we had a bipartisan legislature. We had to do that for every single bill. And I'd like to get back to that situation. And we're not that far, because if Michelle and I both pick up seats, we're only 4 away from an outright majority. We were actually in a worse position in 2008, where we had fewer seats in the Senate. And by 2012, we had the majority coalition caucus, where a few moderate Democrats had come over. And I like the fact that Seattle Times is calling out the moderate Democrats, because we might need their help in order to stop you know, some of the craziness happening from the agenda that's just getting steamrolled through Olympia right now. Yeah. So that moderate influence, you know, we called it ourselves the Roadkill Caucus. as that influence builds, we can stop a lot of the extremes on both sides of the aisle. But right now, the dominant party are the Democrats because they have that supermajority in both chambers and really just one party rule with the governor's mansion and the judicial branch.
Yeah, it's common sense. So, and I was happy to also see some commercials on the air as well. I'm glad that you guys were able to get that spending and get those commercials up. All right, Chad, any final message to voters?
Send in your ballots and encourage your friends to do the same. That is so critical for this particular race.
Yeah, and I think that's the big message in the off-year election is you don't think there's a lot on there. It could not be further from the truth this time around. There's so many important races. And I do want to, in the interest of transparency, I think it's obvious that I support Chad's campaign. I have also contributed as a person individually to his campaign as well. So just in the interest of full transparency, because I know what's at stake in that race. Also, the big races, really quick, we'll tick through them. Similar situation for state Senate in the 26th legislative district. We've got to get Michelle Caldeer in. She is a Republican. She's running against Deb Krishnadanson, who was the installed Democrat. She filled the seat that was left when Emily Randall was elected to Congress. And this just, again, it has really nothing to do with Deb. It doesn't. It's a numbers game. And we need to make sure that there isn't enough of a majority in the Senate for them to push through quite literally anything they want. Different situation in the 33rd legislative district, which is the Burien area. In the state House race, it's two Democrats on your ballot. And as I've been saying, you cannot, as a Republican, if you are one or tend to vote red, you can't just sit it out. You cannot just sit it out. It's so important to vote for Kevin Schilling, the mayor of Burien, who's been very good on public safety and pro-business and taxation. So we need to make sure that Kevin Schilling gets that seat. State Senate, also a situation with two Democrats here. The more moderate Democrats, this is the Kirkland area, 48th legislative district. Amy Wallen really is the only reasonable choice if you're concerned about taxation and the business climate, et cetera. She's not perfect. I'd like to see some better things on public safety from her, but not even comparable. Unfortunately, she had a really poor performance in the primary, so I don't know if Amy Wallen can come back, but that would be my recommendation. And then I didn't put it on here, but just a quick note on King County Executive Claudia Balducci. I don't like either of the options for King County, but I voted when I filled out my ballot yesterday for Claudia Balducci, so I think that she can win. Gurmai Zahalai is too far to the left for my liking. All right, so we'll have more on that in the weeks to come, but the most important thing is just get your ballots in. Okay, coming up next, progressives want to pass crazy policies. We warn about what exactly will happen if they pass said crazy policies. They don't listen. They pass the crazy policies, and exactly what we warned would happen happens almost immediately. I have three examples I'm going to go through coming up next. First, a lot happening. Oh, my gosh. And then the Australian PM is at the White House today talking about rare earth minerals and all sorts of things. And all this impacts the global economy and certainly the economy in the United States. So with all of that going on, are you confused? How does all of this impact my retirement portfolio? Well, don't be confused. Reach out to our friend Zach and just ask for a second opinion. Say, hey, Zach. Brandy told me that you could take a look at my retirement portfolio for free and just let me know if you think I'm properly protected against risk. And he'll say, I'm happy to do that. I would do it even if Brandy didn't send you to me because I love doing this and we love managing risk because that's what they specialize in at Bulwark Capital. So he'll go through your retirement portfolio, give you his honest opinion about it, and he'll share the basic fundamentals of value investing that they focus on at Bulwark, give you a perspective on the outlook for the next few months, and a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com, and don't miss Zach and I every week on Swamp Watch as we dig into the dirty dirt of government. knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right. So there are a lot of policies that have been passed, not only in Washington state, but in Oregon and California. And this happens a lot where, you know, West Coast progressivism, it's like they all move as one. And one state tries something out, some new progressive revenue stream, for example, and the next state just can't wait to do it. And every time that they push out one of these new ideas or policies, it's very progressive. The warning bells ring and we all say, well, if you do that, this will happen. And they don't care and they don't listen and they don't actually care what the consequences are. And almost immediately those consequences come to bear. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. So I want to talk about three examples of this. The first one, I'm just going to get out of the way real quick. The gas, the carbon auctions. Can I just really rant really quickly about this? We've got states that are seeing gas prices right now, one point something. because of Donald Trump and energy independence. 1 point something. Can you imagine? I'd like to even see a three. But we have states in this country, 1 point something. Record low, low gas prices across the country. Not in states that have dramatically increased your gas prices because of their climate agenda. And so Washington State, we're sitting out here on an island with California, and our gas prices are through the roof because of the Climate Commitment Act. And what do we say would happen if they pass the Climate Commitment Act? That your gas prices will get worse and worse and worse. It's designed to gradually increase gas prices. And that's exactly what it's doing. So that's just one of the three I wanted to really quickly get out of the way, because I was seeing all the headlines across the country of low gas prices, and it drives me nuts, because we had an opportunity to repeal the CCA, but because of lies and union money, people decided not to. So maybe we'll have that opportunity again. All right, the second thing I want to talk about is minimum wage. What was the warning? If you just jack up minimum wage, go for this. Initially, it was $15 an hour. Now it's $20 an hour in Seattle. The minimum wage is going to be $21.30 per hour starting January 1st. And so they just keep going it up. What was the warning? Well, there are going to be businesses that can't do that. And so what's going to happen? People are going to get fewer hours, or people are going to get laid off. Especially in these really low margin industries where they're not making money hand over fist. There's really nothing they can do short of, you know, jacking up prices to be able to compensate for that. So you're going to put them in a difficult position. And so in your effort to help workers, you're going to hurt workers. They're going to lose their jobs, or they're just going to get fewer hours. But the progressives didn't listen. And now what's happening? It's hurting workers. They're losing their jobs, or they're just getting fewer hours. And ultimately, they're making less money because of your wild increases in the minimum wage. California is an example of this. So in 2023, Gavin Newsom signed the so-called FAST Recovery Act, and it created a $20 minimum wage for fast food workers. But right now, according to Deseret News, that has led fast food restaurants in California and therefore fast food workers to struggle. And all the things that everybody predicted on the right and on the sane side would happen are happening. It says California Governor Gavin Newsom enacted the minimum wage law, raising the hourly rate from $16 to $20 an hour for fast food restaurants that have at least 60 locations in the U.S. The findings from Save Local Restaurants' independently commissioned study conducted by the Berkeley Research Institute were similar to those of the National Bureau of Economic Research. The study from February found that the wage increase law led to the loss of 10,700 jobs in just 1 year, from June 2023 to June 2024. That one law, the increase to $20 an hour from $16 for fast food workers, resulted in the loss of 10,700 jobs. It says the prices of menu items also increased by 14.5%. A majority of restaurants adjusted their pricing, but others reduced the number of hours employees work and laid off employees or consolidated positions. So 93% of fast food restaurants in California who were impacted by that policy and had to all of a sudden pay workers $4 more an hour, 93% ended up reducing the number of hours employees worked, and 70% laid off employees. It's not rocket science, like basic economics. And they don't, and they'll still say, oh, it's a success, even if every single thing points in the direction of it being a failure and having the opposite of the intended impact. They don't care, because they'll never admit they're wrong. Never admit you're wrong. So you could have people out of work, getting fewer hours, making less money, and they'll still say it's a win for workers. It's just wild. And that article mentioned the where is the name of it? National Bureau of Economic Research report, and the Center Square wrote about this as well. After a year of high minimum wages, a new report shows workers are working less and earning less. So the NBER study, which draws on data from the quarterly census of employment and wages, reveals a 2.7% employment drop in California's fast food industry compared to national trends from September 2023 to September 2024. It says adjusting for pre-law trajectories, it bumps that figure to 3.2%, underscoring how the wage hike disrupted an already fragile recovery in the sector. The Employment Policies Institute quantifies the human toll. Non-tipped restaurant workers forfeited up to 250 hours annually, equating to $4,000 in lost wages per employee, roughly 7 weeks of full-time pay. Yeah, so we're going to go out there, we're going to help workers and all of this, and we're going to stick it to the man and big businesses. And then those workers you were trying to help lost the equivalent of 7 weeks of full-time pay. Great job. Great job. All right. The third thing I want to talk about, this one, I don't think we will fully understand the impacts of it for probably 2 to 3 years, but it's going to be enormously consequential. So what did we say would happen if Washington State passed rent control? What did we say would happen? What did common sense dictate that if Washington State passed rent control would happen? Well, we said that you're not going to have, builders are not going to build here. Builders are not going to build here. And that was in concert with a lot of other policies that were being passed in Olympia that made the cost of building a home or an apartment complex more cumbersome, more cost intensive, all of these things. And so you had the Building Industry Association of Washington down there screaming from high heaven, don't do this, because it will make our housing crisis exponentially worse almost overnight. In fact, you had developers who showed up and testified to Democratic lawmakers, if you pass this, we're not going to build here. They didn't listen. They did it anyway. Well, what is happening now? The builders weren't lying. They're not building here. And that is going to have a ripple effect on our economy and on the taxpayers. This from our friends at Seattle Red. Home building crash costs Washington nearly $1 billion. Will you pay the bill? In it, our friend Jason Rantz writes, Washington State's newly released revenue forecast hints at a grim financial outlook. The state is seeing an $889 million drag on projected revenues, fueled in large part by a collapse in residential construction, according to the Building Industry Association of Washington. Residential permitting and building activity are plummeting to levels unseen since 2013, creating a domino effect across state tax revenues. And again, so look at this now. So they build their budgets, right, based on all these things, real estate excise tax, all the money that the state brings in when a builder comes in and builds a house or an apartment complex. So now they told them exactly what they would do. They say, we won't build here anymore. That's okay. We don't believe you. Or we're going to call your bluff and we're going to pass these policies anyway. And they said, no, we weren't kidding. We're not going to build here anymore. So now about $1 billion is going to vanish from our economy. Where do you think that they're going to get that money from? Because they're not going to cut our budget. They've already shown that they're not willing to cut spending. They're going to get it from you. Whatever loss they suffer because of what rent control and other asinine policies are doing to home building and to builders and developers, they have to pass that loss. They have to recuperate that loss somewhere else. And it always comes back and falls on the backs of the working class. It always does, because all these times where businesses can, you can do business elsewhere. You can build homes elsewhere. You can build apartment complexes elsewhere. If you're a rich person like Jeff Bezos, you can live elsewhere. You can pick up and move. And so they target all these taxes toward people, businesses and developers and all these evil people and rich people. Well, they're not paying those taxes. They're leaving. So it leaves this massive deficit in our budget that they then come back to the only people who can't afford to leave, can't afford to move, don't have a business they can just pick up and move to another state. And so they're going to come to you and they're going to fill this gap with that. So all these things, like I don't feel bad for most Washingtonians at this point. I feel bad for those of you who understand these things and who didn't vote for these things. And we're also trying to wave a red flag to say, hey, don't do this. But the truth is that most voters support the politicians who push these policies. And so then ultimately, you know, they have to pay for it. Unfortunately, the rest of us are just stuck paying for it too. But they send the progressives to Olympia. They elect the progressives in cities like Seattle that want a higher minimum wage. So they're really to blame, the voters, first and foremost, for policies that are leading fast food workers to make less money. They're going to be to blame when the housing crisis is at the point of collapse. They're to blame when it comes to the high cost of fuel here. And ultimately, of course, the media is to blame for not pointing all of this out before these policies are actually passed. Wild. That segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right. I've been putting off talking about Barry Weiss and CBS News and the meltdown happening over there. I'm going to discuss that coming up next. It's just insane what's happening at CBS right now. And the whining from CBS staffers over having a conservative light person as a boss. Wild. First, if you're trying to save some money, you're looking through your family's budget, like, oh my gosh, there's no fat to cut here. Well, take a closer look at your insurance, because you can't just say, we're not having insurance. So the question is, can you save money on your insurance? Want to make sure you still have the right insurance to cover your needs in the event that something unthinkable happens. But I always encourage people, if you're looking for ways to cut costs, insurance is a great place to look at it, especially if you're handling your own insurance. So firstmarkinsurance.com, take the FirstMark challenge. What that means is you're going to give FirstMark an opportunity to earn your business. You're going to go to FirstMark with your current insurance, say, hey, here's what I got. Can you do better than that? They're going to go out and try to do better than that for you. And it could lead to lower rates for you. It could lead to better insurance. It could lead to both. We get so many FirstMark challenge success stories from undivided viewers and listeners. And the common theme is, I should have done that years ago. I agree. There's a reason I'm a member of the FirstMark family, why so many undivided viewers and listeners are, and while there's also a reason why our business is a member of the FirstMark family as well. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they always have your best interest in mind, and you never pay them anything. So they're doing all this for you for free. So firstmarkinsurance.com. All right. So as you know, Barry Weiss, who quit her job as a New York Times columnist because she's not even right. She's not even close to right wing. Not even close. She is a very moderate Republican conservative. She's very reasonable. But you can't even be just right of center in the mainstream legacy news, because if you are, you're absolutely evil and you have no place here. So she left the New York Times over that. She started the wildly successful Free Press, as you know, sold that to Paramount. She's now one of the top executives at CBS News. And the CBS News staff is having a full-blown meltdown. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. And why do they think that Barry Weiss is an extremist? The number one reason is she's willing to cover the radical gender ideology stuff. And not in a cruel way, not in a mean way. She's just willing, at the Free Press has been, to actually cover it and to platform, you know, detransitioners and people who are speaking out against the transing of children. And for that, oh my God, she's an extremist. So of course, this whole deal went down with, and I love the Free Press, by the way. I don't agree with every article that they put out, but you're not supposed to. Why should you agree with every article that a news organization puts out unless they're catering exactly to your ideology? But what she built at Free Press is just awesome. So she sells it to Paramount for a few hundred million dollars, and she's now one of the top executives at CBS News. And the headlines have been nonstop. Nonstop from the newsroom, all these leaks from whiny little woke reporters who think that this somehow like proves that Barry Weiss shouldn't be there. All of these leaks to me are proof positive of why Barry Weiss is needed at CBS News. I mean, everything she comes in and does, they immediately leak to other legacy media outlets and complain about. Like, they were so mad that she asked them to send her information on what they do, kind of a la Elon Musk. Like, how dare you? And they went to their union bosses. Oh my gosh, Barry Weiss is asking for an email about what I do every day. And they were just totally whining. And there's all these internal chats at CBS News about how they're just horrified that Barry Weiss is there. And I think it just shows you a lot, right? That you'd have this big of a meltdown at a massive news organization because one of your bosses is now like a moderate Republican. Doesn't that prove a lot to you about the necessity for Barry Weiss to be there? But this latest article, I think, just takes the cake, and it just totally proves the lack of self-awareness from legacy media. So it technically came out from the New York Times. And the New York Times was doing this sob story about how, oh, CBS staffers, upper-level CBS staffers had a meeting with Barry Weiss, and she had the audacity to ask them why the American people don't trust them. So this is, the New York Post is reporting on that. Barry Weiss asked 60 Minutes senior staffers why the country thinks they're biased. So it says Barry Weiss startled 60 Minutes staffers during a private meeting last week by asking why Americans view the show as biased. another sign of the new CBS News chief's aggressive approach to reshaping the network, according to a New York Times report. Weiss, quote, surprised senior staff when she asked a provocative question. Why does the country think you're biased? The New York Times report on Sunday stated, citing three people who attended the Midtown Manhattan session. The exchange was met with, quote, stunned awkwardness. So the New York Times does a story about Barry Weiss meeting with senior staffers for 60 Minutes. And the question that she asks them, according to three of these 60 Minutes staffers who were horrified by this question and leaked it to the New York Times, she asked them, why does the country think you're biased? And they were stunned and felt awkward at the question. Polling shows the country does believe they're biased. And the fact that they're not willing to, and even if you don't think, even if you're a 60 Minutes staffer or a legacy news staffer and you don't believe you're biased, that doesn't mean you shouldn't contend with the question about why Americans believe you're biased. And if you can understand why are we losing the trust of Americans? Why are we losing the trust of news consumers? If you don't even want to attempt to understand that, then you're going to continue on your decline. You've got half the country, more than that really, that doesn't trust you. And you don't care to ask yourself why? You're stunned that your boss would want you to ask yourself why? I mean, it's proof positive as to why Barry Weiss is needed at a place like CBS News. And she had come in and she did some very generic, she sent out in her first memo to staffers after she was officially on the job. Just basically, I'm really excited to get this opportunity to work at an institution like CBS News. And she said, here are, you know, the things that we should be, that should be guiding us, the tenets that should be guiding us every day. And it was very basic things like treat both parties with the same criticality. And staffers just lost their minds at this very just normal memo about journalistic integrity. And they go out and they immediately leak it to other legacy newsrooms. Look how horrible this is going to be. She's telling us she wants us to treat both political parties with the same criticality. That doesn't mean you have to act like both political parties are equally good or bad. No, it just means that if you're going to criticize the actions of a politician, you put that same critical lens on the actions of other politicians as well, regardless of political party. And I've said on this show, I am more, if you look at how they treat President Trump versus how they treated Biden in the legacy news, I would rather the media treat everyone, every politician, like they treat Donald Trump. I'd rather they err on the side of borderline unhinged than err on the side of going too easy on them. So this is proof positive that Barry Weiss is needed at CBS News. And I can only hope that there's some journalists left within CBS News who understand the benefit that she can be to that organization and to legacy newsrooms as a whole. Because if she can make significant changes at CBS News and CBS does better as a result, their ratings go up, their product improves, then I think you'll see other networks that decide that they're going to follow suit and they're going to try to get back to the role of being serious, credible journalists. It's just unbelievable. All right, coming up next, speaking of, we can be critical of Trump. I don't like a decision he made, and it's genuinely bothering me. So we're going to discuss that. First, coming up in 2 days, there is still time. I checked with him this morning. If you want to register last minute for the Engage conference that's happening this week at the Main Bauer Center in Bellevue, I'll be hosting a conversation about how the media covers housing policy, like the housing policy we just discussed, rent control. So it'll be fun. My friend Jonathan Cho will be there because he's there. I'm sure we're going to get into the homelessness crisis and the intersection with our housing and all of that. So you can join us for that. But they have a ton of other good sessions and speakers happening at Engage. So go to rhawa.org, rhawa.org to sign up for that. And while you're there, become a member of RHA. If you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, really important to have an organization that has your back in navigating all these complex new rules, regulations, and laws, rhawa.org. All right, we'll get to some national news, my criticism of Trump coming up in a moment. But first, I saw this, speaking of the No Kings thing, like really think about this, because I saw Kamala Harris put out this video telling people to take to the streets and all this stuff. So they're taking to the streets and they're chanting, this is what democracy looks like. And I saw signs about we miss Kamala and all this stuff. So Donald Trump won every swing state and the popular vote literally got more Americans to vote for him than Kamala Harris. He won the election, and the Democratic nominee became the nominee without a single vote of the people and bypassed the entire primary process. Is that, that's what democracy looks like? I'm confused. It just is this weird thing. And so she put out this video about No Kings, when obviously, like, her whole rise to be the nominee had nothing to do with democracy whatsoever. But when I saw it, I'm like, immediately, she's running again, isn't she? She's running. Oh my God, she's gonna, and I think that's great. I love that. You know what I would like? A Kamala Harris AOC ticket. Let's do it, baby. Kamala Harris AOC. I mean, is God that good? Is God that wonderful? You tell me, Nicole. She's running, and the one of the most disturbing parts of that is Democratic voters still have her as their number one choice. That is nuts to me. Kamala Harris, still Democratic favorite for 2028 by a ton, 33%, according to the Center Square Voters Voice poll, 33%, and then 21% Gavin Newsom, which honestly, I think either of those would be an absolute gift to the Republican Party. An absolute gift. 17% not sure, and then that's followed by AOC. Mm-hmm. More people want AOC to run than want Josh Shapiro to run, which if I were a Democratic operative, I would be praying that Josh Shapiro was the party's nominee. Because he's probably the only Democrat in the country who has a chance to win independence. And then Pete Buttigieg, which, meh, I think he's a non-issue.
J.B.
Pritzker. Yeah,
that's
okay.
That's comical.
Yeah, I'm only getting to personal insults. It's wild.
This is crazy.
It is. But, I mean, honestly, that's the best case scenario. Well, I would love that. I would love, love, love to see them run Kamala Harris again. And Gavin's, of course, running. But I just think, based on Kamala not being willing to just go away in her book and all this stuff and all the videos she puts out, she's absolutely running for president in 2028. Wow, we will have Republican presidents for the next 30 years. I think they just genuinely want Republican presidents for the next 30 years. All right, Donald, why? So Donald Trump came out and announced he was going to commute the sentence. I think I referred to it as a pardon in our Daily Show poll. I don't think it was technically a pardon, was it? He commuted the sentence for former GOP Congressman George Santos, who pled guilty to wire fraud, aggravated identity theft, and he was sentenced to 87 months in federal prison. And, like, George Santos deserved to go to prison, okay? He stole the identity and financial information of campaign donors. He repeatedly charged their credit cards without their authorization. He's accused of collecting more than $24,000 in unemployment benefits he wasn't entitled to during COVID-19. He allegedly made false statements to Congress. The thing about George Santos, before I get to what the president said, is, like, this guy didn't just defraud people. And for Republicans who might be cheering this on, he defrauded GOP voters. I just don't understand why the president would choose him of all people to get out of prison. But here's what the president said about it. George Santos was somewhat of a rogue, but there are many rogues throughout our country that aren't forced to serve 7 years in prison. Okay. I started to think about George when the subject of Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal came up. As everyone remembers, Blumenthal stated for almost 20 years that he was a proud Vietnam veteran, having endured the worst of the war, watching the wounded and dead as he raced up the hills and down the valleys, blood streaming from his face. He was a great hero. He would leak to any and all who would listen, and then it happened. He was a complete and total fraud. He never went to Vietnam. He never saw Vietnam. He never experienced the battles there or anywhere else. His war hero status and even minimal service in our military was totally and completely made up. This is far worse than what George Santos did. And at least Santos has the courage, conviction, and intelligence to always vote Republican. George has been in solitary confinement for long stretches of time and, by all accounts, has been horribly mistreated. Therefore, I just signed a commutation, releasing George from prison immediately. Good luck, George. Have a great life. This is so bad. It really is so bad. First of all, multiple things I want to dissect there. You cannot have and keep the moral high ground on law and order when you're willing to just release people from prison because they vote Republican. The Blumenthal situation, although he absolutely lied about his military service, has nothing to do with George Santos. And I've said before that, and this goes back to January 6th, like there absolutely were some people who deserved pardons for January 6th, and it's because how they were treated versus other instances of political violence, there it wasn't similar at all. So there clearly were these enhanced sentences that were driven by politics and not precedent. But George Santos committed many crimes, serious crimes that victimized people and, for Donald Trump, victimized GOP donors. The other thing is you can't just pardon people because you like their politics. Like George Santos, what did it say? He had the courage, conviction, and intelligence to always vote Republican. We can't just pardon people because they vote for you.
Commune.
It's a commute. Really bad idea. Now, I'm for post-incarceration pardons. If you have someone who's really turned their life around, they learned a lesson, they've gone an extended period of time without new law violations, pardoning them didn't take away the punishment. They still had to serve. They still had to serve their punishment. So you could do that with George Santos. You know, once he serves his punishment for the crimes he did commit, then he gets out, and let's say he's a changed person, then pardon him. Or see if the next president will pardon him. It's just the law and order thing. And also it says he's been in solitary confinement, and by all accounts, he's been horribly mistreated. That's prison. Yeah. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people in prison who are horribly mistreated. It doesn't mean we just spring them from prison. But I think the law and order argument is the most disappointing. President Trump didn't have to do this. If he was going to do it, he shouldn't have said it's because George Santos votes Republican. And it also undercuts the whole law and order argument. So it's just bothersome to me. And it's a slap in the face to the GOP donors who he defrauded. And it's a slap in the face to the taxpayers who he defrauded. I don't care if he's a Republican. He's still a criminal. So I asked you guys what you think about this in our daily show poll. Let me actually get to that right now, Nicole, if that's all right. Mm-hmm. I said, do you support Trump's? I said pardon the poll. My apologies. It was a commutation. Trump's commutation of George Santos. Yes or no, Nicole?
No, I'm with you.
It's just ridiculous. No reason for
it. I definitely don't think he should have been out right now. Maybe you could have said, hey, something that fits better is 2.5 years or whatever it is, but 3 months, that's silly.
Yeah. 80% of you saying no, you do not support the president's commutation of mm-hmm. George Santos. And that says a lot because most of our viewers, I would say, are conservative. And many of them are Trump supporters. So 80% saying, no, he shouldn't have given the guy a break. Let's see here. Shirley says, my understanding is that Trump commuted his sentence. That's very different. Yes, I'm sorry to that. I'm fine with commuting the sentence. It means very little. No, it means a lot. He won't have to serve 7 years in prison. So commuting it and letting him out immediately basically takes away the whole punishment. Shirley said, I'd be fine with him also commuting the sentence of Letitia James when and if it is handed down, but I want the record of her crime and any professional consequences to remain intact. The verdict is the accountability. Prison in these cases doesn't accomplish much. I just disagree. I think prison accomplishes a lot. E says, no, absolutely not. Santos pled guilty and was convicted of wire fraud and aggravated identity theft. His sentence was commuted, not pardoned. His big mouth and not following prison rules put him in solitary confinement. He does have kind of a big mouth. He's sort of a larger-than-life figure. So Joe says, I'd be happier if he pardoned Derek Chauvin, of course, the cop who's serving time in prison for the death of George Floyd. Samantha said, oof, Brandy, this is a hard poll, very difficult poll indeed. I don't think it is, but I get it. That's why I asked. Matthew says, unnecessary ammunition to fuel the left. Hydro Dog, the GOP wants to be viewed as the law and order party. If you do the crime, you're doing the time. But time and time again, Trump has commuted the sentences of GOP criminals. Yeah, and people will say, well, Brandy, you supported some of the J6ers getting out. No, I said specifically not the ones who assaulted police officers. I don't believe that the ones who assaulted police officers should have received pardons. But I did say that there was ample evidence that the book was thrown at the J6ers in a way that it has never been thrown at individuals who commit acts of violence on the far left. And it was like their sentences were meant to punish Donald Trump, like not really just to punish them. So I think it was a different thing. One more here. Kit says, this pardon commutation, again, my apologies, sends the wrong message about violating federal campaign laws. The president knows things that we don't know about the way Mr. Santos has been treated while incarcerated, though, but something short of a full commutation might have served justice while ameliorating injustices. Yeah, good point. Maybe something a little more nuanced. Okay, we'll get to your chats from the show coming up next. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team have been in this business for a long time. They know the local market like the back of their hand, and you're going to get knowledge, analysis, and insight from Wes that you're not going to get from some of the national national entities that deal in this space. So one of the things I would say is if you're trying to figure out your home's value, you know, rather than going to one of those national websites, go to sellwithwes.com and use his home value calculator, because it's much more tailored with the local market insight that he has, and he knows what's going on neighborhood to neighborhood. So a lot of people right now assume that the market is slow, but the real issue has been, lately at least, that you have definitely more inventory on the market and homes are sitting for a little longer. So that's one of the things when I chatted with him recently that he's noticed is the homes are sitting certainly much longer than they were a couple years ago, where it was like, put that up, and before you even get the yard sign in, somebody's made a full cash offer for $10 million over listing price. Not the same now. Homes are sitting for longer, so you need to make sure that your home stands out and that it's properly prepared for sale. And Wes can help you with all those things. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. That was a weird period of time we were in. Like in our neighborhood, this is like 3 years ago to the pandemic, you know, you'd get that little sign that would go in somebody's front lawn.
Yes.
So you knew they were getting ready to sell it. But then the information would never even go up, and they'd take it out because somebody already bought the house before they'd even got the sign all the way in.
It was wild.
It was wild.
I was trying to buy during that time. It was crazy.
And then they're like, here's all cash. I'm like, where are you guys getting all cash for your homes? And they'd be like, a young couple. I'd be like, where'd you get all cash for your home? Why? Anyway, I'm just glad I married somebody who already had a house. I didn't have to go through any of
that. But those interest rate, like, I have a very good interest rate, and I can never let it go.
You can. You can. You need to be in the country somewhere. You're not a city girl. You're bound for the country. All right. Comments on the No Kings nonsense. Lovely in pink today, by the way, Nicole. Great color for you.
Thank you.
Great color. Old Sub Sailor, $5 super chat. The division is exactly what Comrade Ferguson and his minions want. A divided population is easier to control. Also, so much money went into this No Kings thing. Mm-hmm. Just the Seattle Indivisible, which was hosting the event at Seattle Center. I should have pulled this up. It was the stupidest. It was like, you can help fund this event. And it had all these costs associated with, you know, hosting the speeches, which I get it, you know, rentals and stage and audio, all this stuff. But it was like union stagehands, $9,000. This, $10,000. This, I'm like, it doesn't cost that much. And are you not paying the union stagehands? Is that why you need people to pay them for you? That doesn't make a lot of sense.
And you know what did cost a lot, though, was probably that Constitution thing that they had in every city.
So every city, we need to know where these came from.
Soros.
So they had to have been George Soros. They had these like 20 foot by probably 50 feet constitutions. Where do you even get something like that made?
I don't know.
And they had the same one in every major city where there was a No Kings march. That thing was probably like a 10. Where do you even get that made? It was probably cost like 10 grand. And the same one just happened to show up in
every city.
Okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Really grassroots. Brianne, gee, I wonder what they'd be saying if it was one of their politicians being threatened. Yeah. Matt, quote, they are not after me. They're after you. I'm just in the way. President Donald Trump. So true. Mm-hmm. The vilification. And what I should have asked that guy who had the come kill Nazis with me sign, I should have said, you know, I voted for Donald Trump. Am I a Nazi? And seen if he would say to my face, like, yeah, you should die. Because, like, that's really what you're saying, right? Mm-hmm. You think Donald Trump and his administration are Nazis. So you're suggesting that, what, almost 80 million of us are Nazi supporters or sympathizers? It's really stupid. It's not something you can reason with. But I will follow up. So I'm aware, like, literally Pam Bondi had that video. And I'm aware that they were looking into it. Shouldn't be hard. I was also shocked at the number of people who thought that was a woman in the video. Nicole did too.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, no, that's a dude for sure.
Well, I think it's the head thing.
Headscarf, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's really wild that they just feel like it's okay to say things like that. And I think that's what needs to end. So if it takes them investigating this and, I mean, but, you know, threats of violence against other, I mean, you against like other people against, I mean, just, I mean, innocent people online that just post their support of people. This needs to stop. Like 100%. All of this needs to stop.
Yeah. And I won't get into the details of it, but I had police at my house over the weekend again. Mm-hmm. And I haven't even fully told Nicole the details of it, but I had someone trying online to like, anyway, they were going to come to my house and hurt me. And so, and here I am, and it's just like, and I've been getting letters in the mail, and because it ebbs and flows, right? The threats ebb and flow depending on what happened. And so certainly after I went to the White House, then the unhinged, my support of the initiatives, unhinged responses. So I don't think people fully realize, and there's reasons for not broadcasting all of this stuff, but I mean, if you only knew, like, the even me, little old me, like, in the context of the larger political landscape and voices on the right, I'm just tiny. And even I get death threats.
But the language is not
crazy.
Okay.
No, and the I'm language sure, is not you know, okay.
People are like, oh, I didn't mean it. But no, it's not okay.
No, it's not
okay. It's not okay to talk like that. It's not okay to think like that. It's not okay to put that out there.
Yeah.
And stop it.
And you have to police each other.
Yes.
So when we had that event for the initiatives down in Tumwater, you know, it was like a come one, come all. Mm-hmm. And you're not responsible for every person who shows up. But repeatedly when I was at the microphone and Brian was, it was like, this is, you know, don't let them goad you on.
Yeah.
You know, we're peaceful and all of this stuff. And remember why we're here. And I watched some video later of a guy who was there with us, who was calling someone an F-A-G-G-O-T. And I was like, what are you doing? And so policing people on your own side, if you really don't want to be seen as like hateful, violent extremists, but this guy is walking through talking about no one was raped and murdered in Israel on October 7th and long live October 7th. And everybody's like, no big deal. It's because they believe that. Mm-hmm. Because any person, you're out there suggesting that you have this strong morality, right? No, if you had a moral compass, you'd be like, dude, are you kidding me? We don't want to murder people. We don't want, but they don't. They just let it go. It's just terrible. Absolutely crazy. Let's see here. Garrett, the man with the tide sign, had 8647 in smaller letters in the upper right corner of the sign. I did not see that. Thank you for pointing that out. It said 8647. I did not see that. So I'll go back and take another look.
Yeah, I'll go look.
Megan White, I was also appalled, though not surprised, that Bob Ferguson was cheering on and participating in the protest. Look, the protest is fine. I literally have, if you want to go do that, I don't like that you're disrupting traffic and stuff, but if you want to do that, by all means, 100%, yay you. I'm not the kind of person who'll drive by a sign and get triggered. Like, if there's 100 geriatrics on the corner in my neighborhood, I'm not going to drive by and scream at them. You know what I mean? And so I'm okay with the governor participating, but to the point of my signs that I made, he is happy you're distracted. The governor is thrilled that you're distracted by Donald Trump so that you're not focusing on all of his failures. And that, more than any other reason, is why he's excited about the protest. Let's see. On the Seattle elections, wider elections, Tammy, thank you for encouraging people to vote. So important. Yeah, just vote. I don't even care who you vote for. Democracy is democracy.
We kind of do.
Well, I want you to vote for someone, but I'm not going to say, I hope your ballot gets lost if you don't vote for the person I want you to vote for. At the end of the day, if more people vote for the Democrats, then what am I supposed to say about that? That is democracy. All we can do is make better points, try to have our message reach more people and try to get people to wake up and hold the media accountable for their failures to inform people. That's all I can do. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Charlie said, in Shoreline, my ballot has 12 of 14 positions unopposed. Do you even fill those ones out, Nicole?
If it's unopposed ones?
Yeah.
No. Usually I don't. It makes me angry.
Well, it's also, there's really no point to it, right? Yeah. If I actually support them, I want them to get the little circle. But if I don't, I'm like, it's not going to make a difference anyway. On Chad's interview, Mary Kohler Henderson said, I wish this candidate luck. We need someone who actually cares for more than themselves. Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. Chad's a great guy. Great guy. Let's see here on the impact of minimum wage increases. Kitty Be Good says, whenever they raise the minimum wage, small businesses go out of business. The independent bookstore I worked at in Berkeley closed when they raised it last time. Yeah, but they're helping people. Mm-hmm. Great. Let's see. Rick Johnson says, Washington and California have been run into the ground, yet the politicians want to tell the private sector how to run a business. Wow, exactly. The government's the last entity that should be telling a business how to run its business. And the free market will decide these things. Look, if you're not paying people enough, you won't get workers. You won't find people to work for you. And so there is an element of, now I do believe, for instance, it's time to increase the federal minimum wage. I do believe there are some general thresholds that just make sense. But just saying, oh, let's come up with a number. Oh, $20. It's the stupidest thing. Let's see here. On rent control, Elite Online Trainers says, I manage commercial real estate. No one is building. Straight from the horse's mouth. Yeah, and they said that. I should have pulled up the video of the builder who said, I'll even build an Oregon over Washington if you guys pass this. It's like, do you think he's showing up and just saying that, like, for fun? What do you think is the reason he would take time out of his schedule to travel to Washington and to tell you directly that he won't build here?
And we've already reached out to business owners who have already left Seattle. So this minimum wage goes into effect January 1st. But I've already heard from business owners that we've reached out to talk to them about things in Seattle. And they're like, oh, no, I already closed. Like this last, all the summer, everything that hit them in the last minimum wage shut them down.
Yeah,
so
and what are people
it's
out?
It's just going to keep happening.
Yet 70,000 people are on the streets of Seattle protesting Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And by the way, and this is a video I didn't show, walking past 3rd and Pine and the people living in filth and squalor and injecting needles in their arms. We're so woke and righteous, Donald Trump bad, while you walk by one of the worst drug crises in America. Mm-hmm. And look the other way.
Ignore it.
Disgusting. All right. Let's see. A couple super chats to fit in. Moon Goddess, Brandy's home security fund. We will protect you. Yeah. Appreciate that. My husband will protect me. I'm pretty sure of that. My dogs, though, mostly worthless. Mostly worthless.
Well, the deaf one isn't helping much.
Mackenzie, so our black lab, who's like 15 now, she's looking rough. She's so sweet, though. She went totally deaf. So now you go in the house and you can surprise her and she'll be sleeping and she'll wake up and she'll be like, oh, when'd you get hair?
Poor baby.
Mackenzie's not doing anything. Lucky, you know, I shouldn't tell intruders ways to get around our dog security, but you just bring her a treat. She'll be fine, basically. Yeah, my husband's going to be mad at me, but it's fine.
I believe she'll step up if the need arises.
Look, somebody breaks into my house, they're not leaving alive. You get my drift? Mm-hmm, okay, mm-hmm. So I would recommend against it quite strongly. Papa Woody, $2 super chat, mandatory drug tests for candidates. Unfortunately, I think a lot of them would fail. I put out a theory about why all these boomers are out there protesting Donald Trump. I actually think the theory is pretty sound. My theory is that the boomers who experimented with LSD in the 60s, 70s, and early 80s were actually being microdosed with a mind control agent, and they became communist sleeper cells that were only awoken by a third booster dose of an mRNA vaccine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm in.
I feel strongly about it.
It makes sense.
I think so. I think that's the only thing that happened is like, oh, LSD, the communists were actually putting a mind control agent in you. And then they said, at one point down the road, our sleeper agents will be activated when they get the third booster of the COVID vaccine. Yeah. And now they're all like, whoop, and they're taken to the streets.
Well, it really is how it, like, you fall into these groups and it's like, okay, you're this, like, woke hippie 60-something-year-old. And then, oh, you're this teacher.
Yeah.
Oh, you're, like, healthcare professional. Oh, you're, like, it's very specific.
100%. Yeah, like I saw that video of the chick who was doing this like thing in Chicago, and I tweeted, I said, guarantee she ends up being a public school teacher.
Oh yeah.
And then she had already been identified as a public school teacher. Mm-hmm. Just horrifying. Kathy says $9.99 for my merch postage. Did you order some merchandise and you're paying us on Super Chat for the postage? If you spend over $30, maybe there's an order waiting. Postage is free. Maybe she wanted to pay for it anyway. That's really nice. Bill Biz says, Brandy, enjoyed your interview with Allison Morrow. Yeah, my friend Allison Morrow, she used to be a King 5 environmental reporter. She now does an independent show. And I went on and had like an hour-long conversation for her on her locals page, which was really, really fun. So, all right.
Really quick,
what?
I did find the...
What did you find?
He was right.
Oh, about the...
the Tide guy.
Oh, no. I complimented his sign and it said... and then he said, I told him his sign was peaceful.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my gosh. Holy smokes, that's a good catch. Wow, what a failure I am. Look at that guy, 86-47. And does he not look normal?
Oh, yeah, he does.
What an unhinged lunatic.
I mean, he kind of looks like Chad. We talked on the show today.
Chad Mockendonk, is that you? Is that you? Are you trying to get that progressive vote? That's an unorthodox way to earn the socialist vote. Oh, my gosh. Good catch. Good catch. Fascinating. All right, with that, let's get to our closing. I can't believe I missed that. What kind of reporter am I? Let's get to our closing sanity check. I loved this. President Donald Trump, of course, had a lot of reactions and memes and such to the No Kings protest. But here's what he said on Air Force One.
I think it's a joke. I looked at the people. They're not representative of this country. And I looked at all the brand new signs paid for. I guess it was paid for by Soros and other radical left lunatics. It looks like it was. We're checking it out. I'm not a king. I work my ass off to make our country great. That's all it is. I'm not a king at all.
Yeah, he does work his ass off for sure. And I don't think anyone can deny that. Although one little point of disagreement, I do think that those people are reflective of a segment of the United States. So you can't dismiss them entirely. And you are still their president, after all. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. I'm going to sleep better tonight knowing if I ever get convicted of a crime, Donald Trump will pardon me, whether I deserve it or not, because
commune,
I voted for
commune.
Him. Every Donald Trump voter in America gets one free commutation, one free felony crime, essentially. Ah, good stuff. If you'd like to shop our merch store, I need to pitch our merch. Undividedpod.com, hit shop. Undividedpod.com. If you spend more than $30, maybe get a hat, maybe get a tote, maybe get some of our awesome bumper stickers. Shipping's free. So go do it right now, undividedpod.com. And support our show for how many buckaroos, Nicole?
Five.
Nicole thought it was
five buckaroos.
Just $5. I mean, come on. That's it. See you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon. Toodaloo.